Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Growing Forward, a collaborative podcast between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report, where we look at cannabis in New Mexico. I'm Andy Lyman with New Mexico Political Report.
And I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm a New Mexico PBS correspondent and an on-air host at KUNM.
We're well into our second season, which has largely been focused on tracking the progress of several cannabis legalization bills. Just to catch everyone up, the New Mexico legislature is in its final days of the 2021 session, and there are two legalization bills still in play, one sponsored by a Senate Republican and one sponsored by two House Democrats. Last night, or Tuesday, March 9th, in case you're watching or listening to this later, the Senate Tax, Business, and Transportation Committee moved both remaining bills along. The Senate version, sponsored by Senator Cliff Pirtle, a Republican from Roswell, still has two committee stops before the Senate floor. From there, it would still have to go through the entire committee process on the House side.
There's only about 10 days left in the session, though. So what are the chances that Pirtle's bill will make it through this process?
Most people who have watched or covered the legislature in New Mexico probably know there are nearly no guarantees, but also that bills can sometimes move surprisingly fast through the legislature.
That is true. I've seen that happen. So it sounds like the House Democrat version is the likely winner right now.
That's kind of how it seems right now, especially after last night's hearing. Just a really quick recap of what happened last night, which you can also read about at NewMexicoPoliticalReport.com. The committee last night pretty quickly approved Pirtle's bill after Senate Majority Leader Peter Wirth, who is also a member of that committee, he sort of encouraged committee members to move both bills forward. So as you might expect, Pirtle's bill got the support of Republican committee members, but also House Bill 12, sponsored by Representatives Javier Martinez of Albuquerque and Andrea Romero of Santa Fe, only got support from Democratic committee members.
So we're joined today by Representative Andrea Romero, one of the sponsors of House Bill 12. Representative, thanks for joining us today. I'm sure you're very busy right now.
Yes, thank you, but always excited to talk about this. Thank you for having me.
So last night, we saw some big changes with House Bill 12 from an amendment by Senator Peter Wirth with the help of the Regulation and Licensing Superintendent Linda Trujillo. Limits on production, or at least the ability for the state to control production, has become kind of a divisive thing this time around. Did you and your co-sponsor expect an amendment like this?
We had basically been in conversations with RLD about some of their interest in amending the bill, mostly for functionality, a lot of what we rely on, which was in discussion last night, was on how we regulate this industry and how we do that properly. So basically, I think what we came to was a friendly amendment that allows for the sort of sweet spot that we were looking for on how to encourage the business opportunity that's coming to New Mexico, but also within, you know, sort of a safe zone of being able to possibly put a cap on plant growth or licensure in the future, hopefully not anytime soon, understanding what we know about the demand, but just being sure that we're cognizant of encouragement with reason. So that's what we saw in the amendment, I think. And it's really well worded in providing that sort of vehicle to do it responsibly.
Was this something you talked with the governor's office about?
We spoke with the RLD directly. We spoke with former representative, now superintendent, Linda Trujillo, who is a great friend and an ally in this, I think, in this journey of getting this actually to the governor's office. So, you know, she's been a supporter of cannabis for a long time before she stepped down from her seat in Santa Fe. And so it's great to have her in that seat. And a lot of the conversation was that we're very happy to have her as superintendent for this process, in the hope that we do get this to the governor in the next 10 days, but also really cognizant that we're so reliant on the state government to do this well. Having her in there is part of that plan right now, but when she's not there, how are we going to manage it? And I think that we're all sort of hoping that she's there forever, but if not, you know, we want to make sure that the legislation's really tight for a responsible rollout and, of course, beyond.
Sort of looking ahead, the bill's next stop is Senate Judiciary Committee, which is chaired by Senator Joseph Cervantes. And so just to catch some of our listeners up, Senator Cervantes has made it clear over the years that he's not necessarily the biggest fan of full legalization, with the caveat that he did sponsor the bill that eventually removed criminal penalties for possession of small amounts of cannabis He also recently spoke to KRWG, the public TV station in Las Cruces, and basically said he was going to give these issues sort of a fair shake. Have you had conversations with the chairman or received any indication on how this might go forward?
What we have heard is just, of course, our due diligence in getting it scheduled and moving it through the process is that we are being promised a hearing on this, thank goodness. So we are hopefully going to be in that discussion this weekend. We, you know, outside of any additional amendments or anything like that that could be coming, you know, we're always ready for anything. We're just hopeful to have a, you know, a fair shake and a good conversation about what we've already come through the House and now through our first committee in the Senate with this bill. You know, just hoping to have that discussion. And we're really grateful for so much of his leadership in talking about that social justice component that we think makes this bill so strong.
So again, for listeners who might be watching the session, it seems like time is really getting to a crunch point here. But of course, people that kind of know how the legislature works knows that there's still time for this to go forward. But at the same time, there's also room for amendment debates and sort of dragging these on. Plus, anything else that comes out of the Senate would still have to go back to the House for a concurrence vote. So can you share with us any sort of game plan in terms of what types of amendments you and Martinez might be open to, or things that you're not going to let it get into the bill?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think we're all sort of wondering, of course, with seeing the sort of diverse interests that we've seen in the two bills that are still moving forward now, you know, what will come. And of course, we'll see in the next stage. Again, we're ready for anything, even with the amendment last night. There were some things that we still had questions about regarding, you know, representation from the industry on the regulatory board. Is that going to be okay? That was something that, you know, we asked about, and we're still trying to wrestle through a lot of the rulemaking process so that it is, you know, as soon as we can go to market with this responsibly, we want to. So how that sort of plays out and some of the questions that we heard about what are these responsible use corridors that might be available for folks to be able to use in an open space? What does it look like? Are we talking about tourism? Are we talking about just having a place to go in your community that's safe? So how that sort of plays out, and I think we'll get a lot more questions, I think, from local government, at least I hope so too, about what their rollout will look like. And how we want that formidable conversation to happen with the regulation department on how folks can actually do this in their local area. So, you know, we're learning a lot through the process, but ultimately I think every day is a new day with what's happening and what shakes out. And with 10 days to go, we're just hopeful that with the clock continuing to run as we speak, that we have enough time to get it through the process. And thankfully, we feel that, you know, House Bill 12, having gone through one of the chambers, as you all stated at the beginning, that we're the furthest along, and we're hopeful that this is the way to get it through the finish line.
Question just about the Worth Amendment, Representative Romero. So it seems important to a lot of stakeholders, depending on where they are in the world of cannabis right now, to not have a production limit or a limit on plant count. And so this was part of the amendment that he introduced. And as you say, this was a collaboration with the governor's office, stakeholders, and lawmakers. But could we, I just want to make sure we have this detail. I'm not sure we brought it out, is that it's calling for a market study. Is that what I understand? Can you talk that's about great. Why that's sort of a compromise between no plant limits, no plant counts, and
yeah, so just to describe the debate a bit, you know, we've been hearing the debate has really been between no limitation or capping the limitation on how much basically the larger players in cannabis can grow. Our bill has two separate tiers of licensure, one for micro businesses, which with the amendment will allow them to grow up to 200 plants. So that keeps sort of the small business space really well protected. The fees are very low. We want everyone who is interested in joining the industry and coming to the table to have that opportunity at a vertically integrated license from the micro business perspective. But for the big players that already exist in the medical cannabis field that may want to pivot into the recreational adult use field, the question is, do we cap them right out of the gate at a plant limitation? Well, why we were so against that from our bill perspective, from a market perspective, and all of the sort of economics involved in meeting an unknown demand, we already know that we're not necessarily meeting the demand of our medical cannabis licensees in our state, right? We've already tried to limit out-of-staters coming into our medical cannabis program. So we've done a lot to try to address the shortage of plants in order to meet that demand. So it, for us, it was very much a philosophical debate about whether or not to cap. And then we talk about wanting to take the market share of the illicit market. And if you cap something, then the illicit market can flourish in the sense that their prices are lower. And, you know, we've seen that with alcohol. If you limit licenses, if you limit your production capacity, well, now it's a sort of a cartel industry where prices are very, very high and only certain players can come in. So we want to walk a true balance with that. And the Worth Amendment definitely, for us at least, looks at the sort of on an, I think on an annual basis, perhaps it's 6 months, I haven't gone back to the language since last night, but essentially looking at basically finding that sweet spot, looking at the market, looking at the analyses that we can bring to the table as far as what is the demand. We expect a lot of out-of-state interest coming into the state for the recreational market. I mean, we definitely want to bring in the revenues as lawmakers, of course, to support our state government. This is a huge opportunity for us to really diversify our economy. And so finding that sweet spot is something we've been working through the process. Thankfully, the language is very thoughtfully worded in that it finds that equilibrium. It doesn't artificially limit plant count. It doesn't artificially limit licensure. It does look at how the trends in the market are continuing. It allows for the regulation and licensing department to find that place. And perhaps there's no limit until we meet that demand in the first maybe year, 2 years, 5 years. Again, because there's so many unknowns, we just don't want to limit it artificially at this point. So it's a very well-worded regulatory sort of way. I think we're possibly the only one in the country that's sort of come up with that. Let's just not do something willy-nilly. Let's look at the data. So it's a very, very good way, I think, for us to strike that balance at this point.
I think it was Superintendent Trujillo that brought this up last night, but just sort of on that point that the original bill said explicitly, no department shall put a limit on plants. It seems like maybe the concern there was that if we put that into statute that nobody can touch this, that in a year we have this excess amount of cannabis and we couldn't go back and fix it unless we reopen this law again, right?
Yeah. And that's just, I mean, the thing is, as lawmakers, we're like, well, you know, nothing's perfect when we do get to the point of having a governor's signature on it. All laws are a work in progress. And so we are super cognizant about how we want to, you know, strike that balance. We don't want basically state government to be squeezed out of the process, but because we like who's in charge now as Democrats doesn't necessarily mean that's always going to be the case. So again, you know, we want the power to the people as far as the legislative process goes. That's for us to be able to protect as well. And so we're doing as much as we can to strike that balance for sure.
I generally try to avoid the term get into the weeds, especially when we're talking about this stuff. But looking
we appreciate all the puns. It's fun for us to hear them. Right. So go right ahead.
looking at some of the specifics in Worth's amendment, I think there was a specific fee for plants. I think you mentioned it just a little bit ago. Is that something that you and your co-sponsor, Representative Martinez, might rework? I'm just asking because considering these are not usually in numbers, right? We see percentages in statute, but there's a lot of times where specific dollars in statute and sort of to that point of being able to change things going forward. Is that something that maybe concerns you or maybe you'll look at to maybe adjust that so that we don't have set in stone this specific fee?
Yeah, so it was an interesting amendment, and we had to clarify in committee that this doesn't affect the small business, micro business interest that we want to invite in. So it is really only for those large players. And I was interested, truly, just from a personal note, of Senator Pirtle's amendment to look at a standard plant fee versus capping. So it may be actually an interesting tool for the toolbox to say, we're not going to cap, but this is a revenue opportunity for the state to regulate, license, and keep control of what's out there. But as far as the prices of those go, that's why we actually extended the micro business opportunity from 99 plants to 200, just to be able to know that they're going to be able to make revenue to be able to pay those fees and also have enough, not only revenue, but profit from that enterprise building. So, you know, we're always trying to strike that balance. The fees at least are capped at $50 at this point, up to 50. And I had mentioned that last night. And of course, my Republican colleagues were like, well, they're going to charge the full amount per plant. So, you know, I think we're really looking at striking that balance again on what the right way of regulating it is responsibly. But I think actually, honestly, it could be a tool for being able to keep control over the industry and the what is happening out there, be able to bring in revenue to the state, but do it in a responsible way without actually capping anything in that way. So, I you know, it'll be interesting to see how it ultimately plays out. But philosophically, I'm on board with the fee opportunity that it presents for regulatory balance.
I had a quick question about issues around water, because apparently the New Mexico Esequi Association has raised some issues they'd like to see included in HB 12. If specifically, they've suggested some language around taking into account the inclusion of historic rural communities, land grant communities, in terms of who will sort of be given more access to starting micro businesses, just making sure they're included in some of that language. But they're also very concerned about water use and water rights. And we have seen that play out in other states. I'm just curious if you feel like this might need to be tweaked. I don't know, this legislation or going forward. I know Representative Martinez addressed this a bit last night, but some folks still seem concerned about those.
And their concerns are so valid. I think, you know, water being our most precious resource in the state, it's absolutely top of mind when we're trying to, you know, base an industry off of that resource. So yeah, for me, I think their concerns are absolutely well taken. As far as what we've built into the bill, you know, part of the licensure process, and I'll just restate some of what Representative Martinez has stated last night, is really just that we have a very tight sort of component. You have to have a water right. You have to be able to demonstrate that it's for commercial use. You have to have a watering plan that's based around conservation. And the crop itself, what we've learned from the industry in this process is that from our big cash crops in the state of New Mexico, some like alfalfa, some of the other big ones, cannabis uses about a third of what those resources require for growing a standard crop in a year. When we look at sort of the cost benefit, we're hoping that with all of the constraints that we have surrounding water and building this industry and expanding upon the medical industry, that we're building in those safety nets for water usage. In addition, though, we're obviously looking for how we can incorporate traditional use, how we can perhaps, you know, see some of the lands that are no longer being used for traditional use or in these land grant communities, Esequia communities, for folks to tap into the process. And even at the 200 plant limit, I think there's really great opportunities, but we do want to see that they're responsible with the water resource there. As far as how we can tighten it up, I think it was well received, some of their suggestions to have a water representative on the Cannabis Commission. I, you know, was hoping that regardless of even some of the traditional use, just having that focus on that resource as part of the commission could be a great addition. That's just my personal, we haven't entertained any possible amendment at this point, but it's certainly of interest to me to make sure that we're doing it responsibly.
I'm going to go back for a minute. I know, keep going back to like the plant count versus the, but it just came up when I was talking to a land grant representative. So I think the Esequia Association is looking, they would like to see, I believe, a control on plant count or cap. At least one gentleman I spoke with from land grant community, they are questioning, why do we need a cap on plant count? Why can't you have right to grow? If this is going to be a legal crop, why can't you just grow it? And it's an interesting throwback to sort of the conflicts they had in the past when National Parks and Forest Service were created and all of a sudden they needed permits to go do things like graze or gather wood, which is an interesting, perhaps unique to New Mexico. So that dynamic is sort of playing out, and I don't know how much we can address this in the legislation or if this is going to be going forward around implementation and rulemaking.
Yeah, I mean, we're still operating in a 19th century water law situation in our state, right? So we're walking like a fine line on how to expand while we're also hopefully legalizing a Schedule I federally regulated licit drug in the the way the federal government looks at it. And we haven't seen any legalization effort come forth yet. Nationally, we are hopeful it's coming, knowing all of the different rhetoric that's coming down the pike about decriminalization. And we're hopeful, but we want to still tap into the business opportunity that presents today while it's coming down the pike, to do it in a way that gives us a head start in New Mexico. But exactly what you're talking about is precisely what we're wrestling through and trying to get this right, so that everyone who wants to be part of the future of this as a resource can be part of it. But we want to make sure those voices are heard as well. And definitely come contact us, so we do have those, you know, while we're in the 11th hour of getting this through the process, for sure.
Is every law or every legislation could have unintended consequences? They usually do. And I'm wondering if, even if we have all these, incorporate all these things in, say, I heard some concern in the hearing last night from Senator Brandt, maybe some others, about the advantages that large players will already have even under the system, even if we have these provisions to start microbusinesses, to involve communities that have been hurt by the war on drugs. Anecdotally, I've heard around the country, perhaps in Colorado, there's been a run on water rights if large companies want to come in and be involved in this industry. So they need those water rights, as you say, under your bill, but that could bring some unintended consequences of a rush to get those water rights, right?
Yeah, I mean, not to be too flippant about it, but we don't know enough about how water rights are distributed anyways in our state, regardless of industry. So I think what we have to be cognizant of is how do we, you know, again, look at those regulatory components, whether it be oil and gas, whether it be cannabis, whether it be corn or alfalfa. You know, agriculture being the largest proportion of water rights in our state, we're really wanting to sort of get under the hood with that. And I think one of the suggestions from the Esequi Association was to say if they're going to offer a water right for cannabis, just say they are as well. But we haven't spoken with the Office of the State Engineer about their interest in being able to reveal a single industry over others as well when they do issue that. So again, we don't want to single out and prohibit entry, but we also want to protect our water resource, knowing that it is scarce and perhaps overdrawn already. There's a lot of moving parts to this. The biggest interest is how do we not stifle that interest, but do it responsibly, with the fact that if we don't have water, we can't have this industry at all. Yeah, I mean, your concerns are mine. It's to put it all together and piece it together with the different components is a challenge, but you know, we're doing our best to get through the finish line. And again, with the unintended consequences, We're always trying to prohibit or prevent those from happening. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot more to do, I think, than just with one thing regarding cannabis and water use in the state.
I think we're getting to the point where we can kind of wrap up. And so I was hoping I could kind of get you to talk about something you talked on the floor. I think it was when you first presented the bill. And to be clear, the conversations and debates have sort of shifted slowly away from whether this is a good idea or a bad idea to it's going to happen. How do we make it the best? But in one of the early committee hearings, everyone was talking about, you know, if this is good or bad. And you had shared sort of a personal story, which I thought was interesting. If you wouldn't mind sharing that, sort of the conversation you had with your grandmother talking about presenting this bill.
Yeah. So in doing my own research about my family, the history of cannabis, you know, I was wondering how my grandparents grew up with this. And my grandmother had revealed growing up in Taos that she had recalled as a young girl, her grandfather being really ill. We understand now that he had bone cancer at the time, where, you know, treatments were very small. And of course the doctors in Taos were doing their best, but he couldn't walk at the time that he was really suffering. The family had known about this medicine, plant-based medicine, which is cannabis, and they knew that if they bathed him in it, it would at least ease his pain. So she recalls for like 2 weeks, 2 to 6 weeks, that he had been every single night bathing in cannabis. And by, you know, some time after the four to six weeks, he was walking again and his pain had subsided and he was able to do that. So the medicinal sort of uses of cannabis have been throughout history. The name marijuana hadn't even come up until the early 20th century to really stigmatize Latino communities, communities of color. And so that was definitely their journey in understanding. They were fearful to have this medicine and had to hide it in an outhouse in order to prevent their neighbors from turning them in to have their grandfather be able to have that pain subside. It's a long journey, and I was so grateful to hear that story because, again, it's been medicine for so many for so long, and you know, now we're very much looking forward to adult use, responsible use in our communities in a way that's not criminal.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us today, Representative.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you, Megan. This is such a pleasure, and hopefully we'll be celebrating in the next 10 days that this has gotten through. I appreciate your time.
This was another episode of Growing Forward, a collaboration between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report. I'm Megan Kamrick, a correspondent with New Mexico PBS and an on-air host at KUNM. My co-host is Andy Lyman, a reporter with New Mexico Political Report. Our producers are Kevin McDonald and Bryce Dix. Our music is by Christian Bjorklund, and special thanks to Katie Connolly for our artwork. Remember, you can find Growing Forward wherever you get your podcasts or head over to nmpbs.org.